Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today is Saturday, May 13th, 2017, and it's one day, just one day before Mother's Day. All right, everybody, if you got a mother, mine's dead and gone. I don't have one now, but her memory's in my heart. But for those of you who still have one around, you need to take good care of her. Tomorrow is Mother's Day. They do a lot for all of us, so make sure that you show her the love and care and blessings that she deserves. So just don't forget, Mother's Day is tomorrow. Guys, don't screw it up. Okay, today we have a lot going on. If you want to be a part of this show, you need to give us a call here at 254-697-6633. That's the number right here to the studio. You can give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Once you get there, go to the Facebook and like us on Facebook. Tell us how much you enjoy the show. Give us a call here, and we'll make you part of the show. We're going to have a good time today. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as always, every day I get my coffee, and I tell you this every week, but every Saturday I bring my coffee into the studio here, and I'm showing it on the video. It's my Morning Fresh Joe from CEFCO. I get mine from the Hilltop here in Cameron, Hilltop CEFCO. So if you're around Hilltop, if you're driving through, stop on by, get yourself a cup of coffee, pack of smokes, bag of chips, newspaper, whatever, and enjoy the rest of the day. Because, you know, and Trey, we screwed it up again. Okay. All right, we'll get our act together here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you what's going on with the show here. Today's true stories come from the Concealed Carry magazine. April 2017 issue. There's 10 mini stories, and after reading each one, I'm going to give you my rapid fire analysis on the story. Now, people commented to me last time that they liked it, so we're going to try it again. In my License to Carry segment, it will be actually a continuation from last week's segment covering Penal Code 9.31 self-defense. But this week, we're going to highlight paragraph 5, section C, so you want to stay tuned for that, because after the first commercial break, we're going to have on attorney Rick Dodd. Ross is not with us today. Rick's in. It's a tag team match with these guys. Either or, either one, doesn't matter. It's awesome when we talk to them, so it's going to be a great time today with that. So be prepared for the attorney segment of the program. After that, I'll read our topic of interest, which are all the activities in the month of May and beyond that Aaron's High Cap Adventures will be doing and how you all can participate. At 11, as always, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement, will share his wisdom and knowledge of his years of experience in law enforcement. Now, I get a lot of great comments about this section, too, so make sure you stand by for that one. Today's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, is the Glock 41 Gen 4 and 45 ACP. It's a beast. It's a gentle beast. Looking at it, you would say, oh my gosh. Shooting it, and you'll say, oh, I want one. So get yours at ANC Firearms now. Call 254-983-4417. And towards the end of the program, Trey Wallace, the man, the legend, the board operator of this show, will be interviewing a surprise guest. Y'all know who it is. Guy can be a real jerk sometimes, and that guy is me. So everything you wanted to know about me will be revealed. And if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell you. But anyway, it's going to be a good show. We got a lot going on here, and we're going to move right along. I want to see if I can stay on track. I have a tendency to have diarrhea of the mouth. I just talk. So I got to maintain time schedules here. We're going to move right into the Concealed Carry Magazine, the true stories. There are 10 of these stories. That's why I'm going to read it fast and give you quick bullet analysis here. So story number one, this comes from the April 2017 issue of the Concealed Carry Magazine. Number one, Pennsylvania man thwarts street assault. An only man was leaving a Chinese restaurant one night when he was approached by a man who punched him and then chased him down the street. Fearing for his life, the victim drew his legally carried pistol and fired on the assailant, hitting him in the leg and stopping the attack. The victim remained at the scene until authorities and medical personnel arrived. He's cooperating with police. Quick analysis. Hitting him in the leg. Most probably anticipating the shot due to stress and lack of training. Story number two. Maryland man stops car break-in. A Baltimore County man took a rifle with him when he went to investigate after he saw someone trying to break into his car around 4:30 a.m. When the owner approached the scene, the car burglar slashed at him with a knife or a screwdriver. That's when the car owner, fired one shot from the rifle, hitting the suspect and putting him to flight. Responding police caught the 17-year-old miscreant, and after treatment of his wounds, he will be charged as an adult with felonious assault and other crimes. Number two, bullet reply here. In this story, homeowners started with Penal Code 9.42, deadly force to protect property. Once bad guy attacked the homeowner defended himself under Penal Code 932, deadly force in defense of a person. Know your penal code. Story number three, California man shoots home invader. A Long Beach man heard sounds of a possible break-in at his home at about 5 one morning. Taking up a gun as he went to investigate, he found an unknown man in his house and fired on the man, killing him and ending the incident. Police are investigating the incident as a burglary attempt ended by self-defense by the homeowner. My analysis. The homeowner got a gun before he went to investigate. Not investigate and then get a gun. Always go with a gun. You may not have a chance to retrieve it later. Story number four. Michigan man fires on pit bulls. A Taylor man was approaching his vehicle in broad daylight when two pit bulls approached him in a threatening manner. Fearing attack when the dogs growled and bared their teeth, and seeing that he had no room or time to retreat to his home, the citizen drew his legally carried pistol and shot the closest dog, injuring it and driving both animals off. Responding police determined the man acted in self-defense. My bullet analysis. I hate pit bulls. I hate pit bulls. I hate pit bulls. Story number five. Georgia gun store owner defends against robbers. A Cobb County gun store owner was opening his store one morning when two armed and ski masked men entered and announced a robbery. The store owner promptly drew his own pistol and fired on the robbers, killing one and putting the other to flight. The store owner was not harmed in the incident. My analysis. Can you say LMFAO? Sure you can. Laugh my F-A off. Okay. Story number six. Michigan man fights off carjacking duo. A Detroit man was accosted just after midnight at a gas station by two men who demanded his car. Fearing for his life, the motorist drew his legally carried pistol and fired on the men, wounding both and ending the incident. My analysis, you have a choice. Be a victim or be armed and know how to use it. This man was prepared. Story number seven. North Carolina man prevents home invasion. A Fayetteville man heard noises around his back door about 2 one morning. Taking up a pistol as a precaution when he went to investigate, he encountered a stranger in his home and ordered him to stop. Instead of halting, the intruder advanced on the homeowner, who fired on the stranger, hitting him. When the intruder kept advancing, the homeowner shot him again, at which time the intruder fled the scene. The man was later apprehended by police when he sought medical attention for 2 gunshot wounds. My analysis. Homeowner did great, but may have needed a larger gun or better accuracy. For home defense, carry the biggest you can and practice. Story number eight. Florida Uber driver defends against armed robber. While taking a fare to the airport, and a Ventura Uber driver was cut off by a van driver who approached the Uber driver with pistols in both hands and tried to rob him. The Uber driver was armed and responded by firing 4 shots at the robber, killing him. Police are calling the shooting self-defense. Uber had no comment on the incident, though their policy is that Uber drivers are not to be armed. My commentary. Hey, Uber, screw you. Story number nine. Texas store owner fights back against disgruntled customer. A Sherman grocery store owner had a problem with a customer that resulted in the customer being escorted off the premises, warning, "I'll be back." Sure enough, the customer re-entered later and assaulted the owner with a machete. Fortunately, the owner had a legally carried pistol, which he used to shoot the customer and drive him off. The customer was apprehended when he sought medical treatment for a single gunshot wound to the upper torso and will face felony assault charges after his recovery. My commentary, don't bring a machete to a gunfight. And last story, Nevada armed citizen stops daylight 7-Eleven robbery. When a North Las Vegas 7-Eleven was being robbed about 3:30 a.m., a legally armed citizen in the store took action. Seeing the store clerk being held at gunpoint, the citizen drew his pistol and fired on the robber, putting him to flight. The robber collapsed and died a short distance from the store. Police noted there was an ongoing robbery and the citizen felt that he needed to take action. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Penal Code 9.33, defense of a third person. Bonus, know your gun, know your abilities, and know your penal code. All right. Moving on, if you got any stories you want to tell me, give me a call, 254-697-6633. I want to hear your true stories. Tell me what you did. Tell me how you did it. Tell me what happened, so on and so forth. Let's move right on to our license to carry segment, because I think we're pretty much on time here. Okay, everyone. Last week, I read to you Penal Code 9.31. Well, I'm going to read it to you again, but then focus on paragraph 5C. If I read my paragraphs right, I mean, the way they got these things numbered here, I never know what paragraph I'm in, but maybe our super attorney over here can square me away on this. This part of Penal Code 9.31 can get a little intense, so I'm going to set it up so that after the break, attorney Rick Dodd here can enlighten us on the ins and outs, ups and downs, benefits and pitfalls of this specific part of Penal Code 931, self-defense. So I'm going to read it to you. I'll try to read it clearly. It's Texas Penal Code 9.31, self-defense, sometimes referred to as castle law. Except as provided in subchapter B, a person is justified in using force against another when and to the degree he reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to protect himself against the other's use or attempted use of unlawful force. A person's belief that the force is immediately necessary as described by this subsection is presumed to be reasonable if the actor, one, knew or had reason to believe that the person against whom the force or deadly force was used unlawfully and with force entered or attempted to enter the actor's home, vehicle, or place of business or employment, unlawfully and with force removed or attempted to remove the actor from the home, vehicle, or place of business or employment, or was committing or attempting to commit aggravated kidnapping, murder, sexual assault, robbery, or aggravated robbery. This is a long one. Two, did not provoke the person against whom the force or deadly force was used. Three, was not otherwise engaged in criminal activity at the time force or deadly force was used. And what Ross said to us last week, the basic summary of this, is that the actor who has the right to be present at the location where the force or deadly force is used, who has not provoked the person against whom the force is used, and who is not engaged in criminal activity at that time, is not required to retreat before using deadly force. Now, I'm going to skip the rest of it and go to the part that I want to talk about. It's going to be, it says here, the use of force against another is not justified to resist arrest or search that the actor knows is being made by a peace officer or by a person acting at a peace officer's in a peace officer's presence and at his direction, even though the arrest or search is unlawful, unless the resistance is justified under subsection C. And what that is, it reads, the use of force to resist an arrest or search is justified, one, if before the actor offers any resistance, the actor being you, the peace officer or person acting at his direction uses or attempts to use greater force than necessary to make the arrest or search, and two, when and to the degree the actor reasonably believes the force is immediately necessary to protect himself against the peace officer or other person's use of attempted use of greater force than necessary. And what I always say on this is have your video camera rolling, because if you start jacking with an officer, you're going to have some trouble. So I need to talk to our super attorney here, Rick Dodd, after the break and see what his expertise tells us on this section. So Trey, let's take a long break, and when we come back, we'll have super attorney Rick Dodd. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Today is Saturday, May 13th, 2017. And remember, tomorrow is Mother's Day. Don't forget to take care of your moms out there. Wish them a happy Mother's Day. Give them a hug, give them a kiss, give them a flower, take them to lunch, dinner, something. Do something. Take care of them. Okay. We're back here now with super attorney Rick Dodd. Rick, it's a pleasure to have you on again. Let's get that microphone to make sure that you're going to be heard over the airwaves.
It's good to be here. You know, about Mother's Day, there's another big Mother's Day. It's always your birthday. You always should call your mother on your birthday. Thank her. It's a big day for her, too, you know.
Yeah, you were both there at the same time, so that's, I mean, right. You're sharing the same experience. One may not remember, but you're both there.
Well, she could tell you about it.
Okay. All right, Rick, we set it up here. We were talking to attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson last week about this penal code, and we decided we were going to discuss it further on this one aspect of it, and that was it's not justified upon, how's it termed exactly? It says here, the use of force against another is not justified, and we talked about paragraph 2 and then section C here about law enforcement. Do you want to just go right into it and give us your thoughts about that and clarify what it means? And
well, I mean, what you got to first look at is the word unlawful. And whenever the police are making an arrest, generally what they're doing is lawful. So when you get beyond what is lawful as far as what the police are doing, you got to be looking at the word reasonable. So here's the setup. If you have one police officer and he's trying to arrest three different men, and they are being belligerent and they are being scruffy and they are resisting, his ability or his right to pull out a billy club and club a couple of them may be more reasonable than if you have three policemen and one man.
That's a good illustration. I understand it totally. For a simple mind like me, that's good.
And where does it cross the line into unlawful? I think what you got to look at is what can affect an arrest. So if you have someone who is willing to put their hands behind their back or lay on the ground with their hands spread out, unlawful would be the policeman walking up there and kicking them in the groin. Unlawful would be the policeman pulling out his billy club and whapping them a couple times across the back, or maybe taking a headshot at them. I mean, he's being compliant. They're able to make their arrest easily. So it depends on the circumstances as to what is reasonable and then what crosses over the line into unlawful. Now, you said a minute ago, you said something about have your video camera on. No doubt about it, because when you get to beyond the point of getting billy clubbed, you know, and hurt and having to go to the hospital and get your head repaired, you wind up in the courtroom for having beat up a cop or whatever you did to protect yourself. In other words, the force you may have used to protect yourself against an unlawful assault that has occurred to you by a police officer. And when you're sitting in front of that 12-person jury who's going to make the determination about those words unlawful and reasonable, you have to remember that in their mind, it makes them very uncomfortable to believe that a police officer did something wrong. So you have a really big hill to climb and get over the top of. You expect to be found not guilty by that jury.
Let me step in here for a second. If that situation happens, and I hope it never does, but you know it does, where a person is in position and they're getting unlawfully abused and you start fighting back, that's almost worse than the initial onset of being attacked by the individual unlawfully, because you know what's going to happen. They're going to get swarmed with other officers. So it's like it's in a catch-22, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. We see it on TV now a whole lot because of cell phones.
Yes.
And we see it on TV a lot more because police officers don't like cell phones. And, the police officers may actually try to arrest people that have cell phones. There was a case that occurred that the U.S. Supreme Court spoke to, I think in 1992, it might have been 1982. And, of course, you know, I'm a student of the Constitution because I'm a lawyer. I probably sat in a classroom and took, I think, about 16 hours of constitutional law. So I love the Constitution. I believe in all the rights that were given to us, and I believe that they're all sacred, including the Second Amendment. But also, I like the First Amendment. I like the amendment where we're able to assemble and talk about our government. I like the, they're all important. So there's a case where an attorney was offended because he saw police giving a hard time to some gays who were having a rally. And the gays were dressed in leather and chains, and the police officer were systematically arresting them for disturbing the peace. And the rationale was, well, they're marching, and they have chains, and they have leather, and that is disturbing the peace. The attorney steps up in front of the police and says, gentlemen, you are breaking the law. You are doing an illegal arrest because these people are not doing anything to provoke anybody except marching, and they have that right to do under the Constitution. The attorney was arrested and, of course, taken to jail and had his day right, so to speak. But the Supreme Court said that he had that right. He had that freedom of speech. And as long as he wasn't grabbing at the police officer, doing something wrong, that he should be found not guilty. So that's a situation where, you know, the police officers might be doing something wrong, and the Constitution was being protected by someone who felt offended by the fact that the police officers are doing what they're doing. And you got to remember about the Constitution, it was written to protect the minority from the majority. So even though these gentlemen that were marching in the Montrose Parade down in Houston with their chains and leather may not be the kind of folks that a lot of the majority wants to hang out with and socialize with, they still have their rights under our Constitution to the equal protection of law.
I can't.
And that's the constitutional part that attorney was upset by.
I can't agree with you enough. I'm totally in the Constitution as well, the whole works. I just want everybody to know out there, the reason I say this all the time, but it's very important that I say it every time, and that is I ask questions a certain way because there's a lot of variances in responses, and you've got to be aware of what can happen based on your response in a certain situation. Even though a law may say one thing, it may get twisted around or diluted or misaligned. And so we're trying to give you all different aspects of it, especially with a man here, Super Attorney Rick Dodd, who's got how many years, Rick? 30?
35 now.
35 years of experience. I mean, he's been around the block, been around the planet, so he can tell you what's going on. Is this pertaining to law?
It's something about what you're talking about.
We got somebody on the line here. Let's see if it'll apply.
You want to talk to them about what we're talking about right now?
You want to take a question?
Sure.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we got a caller. We're going to set it up here.
Let me translate.
You would agree, though, Rick, there's a lot of potential for danger on this particular section when it comes to law enforcement.
Oh, absolutely. Because they have the guns and they have the billy clubs, they have the mace, they have the handcuffs, they have the jails, they have the judges.
And yeah, you said no. Okay. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, doing pretty good now. I like listening to you guys.
Well, fantastic. We appreciate your call. What can we do for you? What kind of question you got for Super Attorney McDonald?
You know, they say it's against the law to shoot someone comes up in the yard and threatens to kick your butt and stuff. I had an officer over here to tell me that if a guy threatened to come up here and whip my wife for no reason, and I called the officer, and he come over here in Rockdale, and he said, I had every right to defend me, my wife, and my property. I said, well, I got a shotgun. I pulled it on him, and I blew his legs out, and he's, well, you got the right. You got the right. Is that true?
Well, Mr. Johnson, you are going to cut a very fine hair there, and here is the hair that you might have to cut. There was the case called the Martinez case that came up in front of the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, which, of course, in Texas is the highest court of criminal matters unless it is then sent to the Supreme Court of the United States. But the facts of the Martinez case were pretty clear. In other words, the Court of Appeals said, well, there was no dispute about the facts that were presented in court. Now, you got to remember, presented in court may be different than what actually happened. Because, you know, we have their truths, we have our truths, and then the jury has their own truths.
Yeah.
But in any case, the Martinez brothers, Renee and Rudy, they had been gone for one evening, and a couple from down the street happened to come to their home and burglarize it and take their stereo system and several guns, pistols, shotguns, things of that nature. But unbeknownst to the burglars, a couple across the street watched them do this and actually followed them back to their home and watched them unload the stuff into their home. So when Rudy and Renee came back home, the neighbors told them about this, told them the address, and so Rudy goes down and gets himself a shotgun, and they decide to go over and get their stuff back, or whatever they decided to do. In any case, they went over to get their stuff back.
Yeah.
Well, in the process of that, there were a couple of fellas that went with them who were, I think they were driving tow trucks, but they went with them and sat outside and waited. The testimony was only given by Rudy because, guess what, the two folks inside the house had gunshot wounds that caused their heart to stop. One of them had a couple of gunshot wounds in the back of his head. So the testimony basically given by Rudy was that it was self-defense, that he had brought the shotgun with him because he was worried that when he got there would be trouble. Gosh, guess what? There was trouble.
And, yeah, what?
And that the other guys had actually attacked him. In other words, they had made a move beyond just verbal, and this is where, you know, you need to listen because you're talking about the verbal stuff. They had talked about verbal.
But anyway, I told the officer I didn't want to kill the guy, but I said I will blow his legs out from underneath him.
Well, when you start blowing somebody's legs out from under them, you can pretty much expect that they're going to die, especially if you do with a shotgun, but that's the expectation. But anyway, back to the story. The Court of Appeals, they were first convicted, okay? They were convicted of murder. And because they had done a couple other things, I think it was even capital murder. But in any case, the Court of Appeals affirmed that conviction, but the Court of Criminal Appeals overturned it because they said there was no evidence, none, that they had actually gotten the shotgun with the intent to go over and kill anybody. The only evidence was they had gotten the shotgun simply to protect themselves in case there was trouble, which that is exactly what had happened.
Okay.
So then I just wanted
to find out.
There's another case that's important to your subject that has to do with a fellow who was called by the neighbor lady. The neighbor lady had apparently, Mary was her name. She was getting beat up on a pretty regular basis by old Charlie. So the fellow who's kind of a good Samaritan and his dad, his 59-year-old dad, go over and help her pack up some of her stuff. And while they're packing up her stuff, guess what? Old Charlie, he comes back home, and he asks where and he doesn't call her by nice names, is. And they ask him to please leave. Charlie had given his 59-year-old dad a a tire checker, you know, one of those aluminum tire checkers, which I guess, you know, that could be a deadly weapon because it would be a club. But in any case, also Charlie, by the way, was using his pocket knife to cut tape and box up the boxes. So you see the story is getting set up. Now, Mary had already told the Good Samaritan neighbor that Charlie was dangerous because he had a pistol in his car. Well, during the exchange between Charlie and the Good Samaritan, the dad walks in with that little hammer in his hand and says, Charlie, you better get the heck out of here. You're not welcome here. You need to leave. Mary needs to leave. You don't need to beat her up anymore. This is just a bad scene. Get the heck out. Well, Charlie, you know, being not a real nice guy in the first place, says, well, I'm just going to kill you. I got a gun out in the car, and I know how to use it, and I'm going to take you out. Now, you need to leave. So they said, no, we're going to stay here and help Mary get out of this situation. So Charlie turns around and starts to leave and go back to the car, where the Good Samaritan then pulls his pocket knife out and basically takes his guts out of him. So Charlie continues to try to go to the car, so he gets taken a couple more stabs in the belly. Well, finally, Charlie turns and goes towards another direction, and the young man with the knife then stops. So when they go to court, the young man is charged with murder because Charlie does die from those wounds, and he is convicted. But it was overturned because the evidence was clear, undisputed. There was no question about it that Charlie was stabbed only when he was making a move. In other words, he was doing more than just verbal provocation. So you can't just shoot him, sir, when he tells you that he's going to do this. But if he makes a move for his gun, and there's that word reasonable. I hope you're a reasonable person, sir.
If
you've got that reasonable belief that he has a gun and he's moving to get it, then if the jury believes you, you have the right to shoot him.
I want to chime in here. That's why, Mr. Johnson, I'm always pushing and promoting that you must be prepared. Prepared in training, understanding your mindset, understanding the tools that you're going to use for your defense, understanding penal code.
You have to thank you a lot.
All right, thanks. You keep listening. And you have to be prepared in all three aspects and blend them all together, because in a situation like Attorney Rick Dodd here is saying, there's if you don't know one, if you know two, but you don't know the third, it's going to get you screwed. So you have to know it all, put it all together, and make sure that you apply the type of force at the appropriate time for the appropriate reason. Otherwise, you're going to be in court spending a lot of money and probably spending a lot of time.
Well, Matt, I think you talked a little bit about it last week when you said that you basically need the training because that gives you the confidence. And when you're in a tight situation like that and you feel confident that you can take control of the situation within a half a second, then you have more time to let the situation diffuse itself.
That is correct.
Like the gentleman that just spoke here, I mean, who's ever standing in the front yard, if he were to take about 10 steps toward him and start pulling his gun out, then, you know, that could be the end of it, as opposed to having to take him out 30, 40 yards away while he's still wrapping his mouth.
Right, exactly. All right, well, Barry, that was an excellent call. I appreciate people who call in with questions like that. It opens it up into different directions as compared to me just talking here.
Yes, sir, Mr. Johnson. Thank you.
All right, Rick, what else did you have on your list of fact sheets here that can pertain to this Penal Code 931 that you wanted to discuss or make more clear?
We all remember watching television, the Los Angeles riots right after Rodney King had been beaten. We see now on television situations where young men are running away from police and they get shot in the back. So we know that unlawful force is used. And we know that situations can be looked at in different ways. And it's always difficult for us watching television or listening to the radio to put ourselves into the place of these police officers. But, you know, you got to remember they're human beings too, and they have emotions and they have feelings. And when someone is trying to beat on them, the natural feeling or emotion is I need to beat back on them. So it can happen. It can happen. And we know it can happen, but, you know, most of the time it doesn't.
I want to say something that is going to sound kind of weird, but it's true, okay? And no disrespect to who I'm about to say this to. If I get an opinion from a law enforcement officer, it does not have much weight with me. Because there has been too many times when, I'll give you an example. Somebody says, you know, if you shoot them, drag them in the house. You're going to screw yourself if you do that. A law enforcement officer is a defender of the law. He's a recording device. He's all that kind of stuff. But he's not an attorney. He doesn't know the ins and the outs. And he may give you bad direction or bad guidance unless clear, black and white. It's a red light and you drove through it. You're in violation of the law. Okay? So when somebody comes up to you and says, well, you know, you just do this, I know what I'm talking about. No, study it. Go find it out yourself. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in a predicament that you don't want to be in. Would you concur with that, sir?
Sure. Because, you know, it's just like these cases. There are fine lines, and, you know, some opinions can fall on one side of the line and some on the other. I mean, after all, you look at this one where the Court of Appeals, who had three judges who supposedly have all the intelligence in the world, so to speak, but basically they have a lot of people writing what the case law before them say. They get to look at all the facts and get to determine them in a matter of months as opposed to a matter of seconds. And they came up with the wrong opinion, according to the Court of Criminal Appeals.
I want to ask you a question about that. Does a judge actually read it all? You know, when they passed the Obamacare, nobody read it. They just said, well, we're going to vote for it. How much time does a judge apply to reading everything so that they can be totally informed? Because I know me, if I was a judge and I got 24 hours in a day and I got family and I got chores and I got all this other kind of stuff that I've got to do and other details within the confines of who I am and what I do, how much time you actually got to read that?
Well, you know, in any business, you got people that are going to be good and not so good, okay? I would like to think that all the judges out there in the world are good, but in my 35 years of experience, I can tell you it just ain't so. I think they all do the best they can with what they got, and what you just described, family, things, other things to do. A lot of judges are very popular. They want to be invited to dinners and what have you. And then also, you know, the caseloads can be different. I've been in court where there's like five or six cases set up for docket call, and then on other days, I've been in court where there's 15 or 20. So I think they do the best they can, but I don't think they can read it all, no. But in the appellate situation, they all have understudy attorneys whose job it is to just read this stuff and sort of put it into bullet points, if you may. So the judges that actually sit up on the bench three at a time, or, you know, in our U.S. Supreme Court, nine at a time, they have access to all this extra help, briefing attorneys, people who write the opinions for them, ghostwriters, so to speak, so they can go back and do it. But I'm telling you, being a judge like the district court in these counties, that's a tough job, because I've sat there so many times, and when the first lawyer gets up and makes his 30-minute oral argument after he's turned in an inch-and-a-half brief, I'm sitting there thinking, man, he is right. I don't see how the other guy's had a chance at all. Then the other fellow or lady stands up and gives her passionate 30-minute argument after she's turned in a 3-inch reply. And I'm going, wow, I think she's right. I don't see how the other guy could possibly win.
Bottom line, stay out of court.
They did. But, you know, the judge has to make a decision based on all that. And it's like, wow, I'm glad I don't have that job. That's a tough one.
Rick, we have competitions. Actually, we just had a let me sidebar this in a minute. We had our round robin competition yesterday. Fantastic. We got shooters coming up from these competitions that are getting very good. Had one who was in here and has done probably about five or six of them, started off rough and won. He won his little revolver. So, great thing. The reason I'm bringing that up is when I compete into these things, in these round robins, you've got all these different guns that you don't know, you don't see, particular problems that may arise that you're not aware of. But because of my expertise in the field that I do, I'm able to juggle the mistakes or the problems and still come out in time with accuracy, win the program because of the experience. Would you not suggest that a person, if they need an attorney, they need somebody who can, because of everything you say in the court, that he's got an excellent presentation, but she's got an excellent presentation. You need some attorney in there who can jump through the hoops and on the fly and do it at a moment's notice as compared to someone who may know law black and white, but may not be able to adjust or respond quickly enough to something that happens in the courtroom that's unexpected.
Oh, absolutely. And you also need an attorney that knows some of the justices, and I don't mean know them personally, like go out and have drinks, but I mean have the experience to know what that judge is thinking, has read a lot of their appellate briefs. So if I take a case up to the U.S. Supreme Court, I'm not going to be the one to stand there and argue that. I'm going to get some of the guys up in D.C. to do it on a regular basis to help me with this. And that's not an uncommon thing. We actually have appellate specialists, board-certified appellate specialists. And depending on, of course, the importance of the case, I've argued cases in appellate court here in Texas. But, you know, generally they're personal injury kind of cases where the question is very simple. The other side lost, and they just want to appeal. The state of Texas, for instance, always appeals any case where we get more than their limits. The limits in Texas, you know, maybe $150,000. So if you get a verdict for more than that, they got to pay $150,000. And they have, in my opinion, a standing order to appeal every single one of those cases. So those are fairly simple, not that big a deal. But when you get into some of these bigger areas of concern where public policy might dictate that we decide one way or another, and there's going to be about half the people on one side and half the people of the world on the other, you know, you need somebody in there that kind of knows what to expect from each one of these different judges.
Now, can you give a 10-point list of if a person needs an attorney, what it should be? And I think that 10-point list will be your phone number. Why don't you try it?
Well, you know, again, I've been doing it so long that about 80% of the people that call us, I give them information that helps them find another attorney. Because I'm not going to do what Ross Watson does. I'm not going to go down to the courthouse and take a murder case. I've done those in the past, back in the first few years of my career. But I don't feel competent to do a murder case right now. Now, I might sit with another attorney to do the murder case if there are a lot of facts involved that need expert witnesses, because we do a lot of expert witnesses in my field. But if you wanted to call us, you could call us at 800-460-0606, or you could look on the back of the phone book or look us up under respectforyou.com.
And we got a link on the website, the radio page. If you want to go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the radio page. We got a link there for respectforyou.com, and you can check out Rick and what he has to offer there. Rick, we got maybe about 2 minutes left. Anything you want to close up, wrap this thing up here about this whole topic? We went all over the place, but maybe you can pull it back in.
Well, it may take more than 2 minutes. You got more than 2 minutes?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, there's a theme of plates. One thing I want to talk about a little bit was there was a case where a fellow was holding a plate, and he was told that they weren't going to serve him there at this particular establishment, and the actor knocked the plate out of his hand. The court said that the plate was an extension of his body, and that was an assault because the defendant knocked the plate out of this gentleman's hand. And, you know, the reason I wanted to bring that up is because I know that we've talked about the gentleman over in Temple who made a lot of media, CJ.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered why the gun that he was holding was not an extension of his body under the same law that we were looking at here, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals.
Because it must have been a Friday.
Must have been a Friday.
Somebody,
There's
all these different, the personality of whoever's listening, the attitude of the judge, who knows.
And of course, the lawyers that represent him were good lawyers and all. I don't know. I can only assume that they knew about this case. Ross and I had talked about it. But, you know, they may have had other ideas, and they may have decided that it was a better track to take a different road than try to get a defense on that.
All right, Rick, time is up here. One last time, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you. It's respectforyou.com. What are the phone numbers?
1-800-460-0606, or right here in Cameron, 697-4965. But just ask around. You know, I've got a lot of people out there that know me and that I've represented in the past. They'll tell you that we do a good job. We care about our people. We don't treat them like numbers. We've worked on cases pretty much all over the United States, and we got a lot of experience doing what we do.
Well, I'll tell you what, if anything happens to me, expect a phone call. I got you on speed dial.
Thank you, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go over our topic of interest. Rick, thanks again for being on, and we'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thank you, folks.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Ladies and gentlemen, that last segment, whether I've got attorney Benton Ross Watson on or super attorney Rick Dodd, two totally different personalities, two totally intense individuals who are totally into what they do. It's extremely enjoyable to listen to. I can ask a question, and they go off the fly. I mean, they've got the knowledge, and it's not, I can't trump them on a question. They go, oh, yeah, well, let's talk about this, you know? So it's really good to know we've got that kind of expertise on the air going over the license to carry segment most of the time. Okay, now back to our topic of interest. A lot of things going on. I want to talk about, I brought it up in the last segment about the round robin. Yesterday was our round robin shoot-off. And if you're not aware what the round robin shoot-off is, I'm going to tell you. It's a competition. It's a pistol competition, and it's not what you would normally think of as a pistol competition. It's not a marksmanship type of competition. It's not one of these where you're standing in a box and the whistle blows and you've got your gun formulated to fit the corners of doorways to brace it up. The heck with that. This is the gun I carry. This is the gun I'm going to defend myself. I bring it to the competition. I put it on the table. I'm ready to go. And so what we do is strings of five people. Each person is probably, most likely, most of the time, have different guns. And they'll go into the gun range with their slide locked to the rear or their cylinders open and the magazine out, and they'll put it on the table there. And I've got, if there's five shooters, I got five targets. On each target is five bullseyes numbered 1 through 5. So if the first shooter comes up, the shooter will only shoot at the number one on each target, and they're going to have 50 seconds to engage all the targets. Here's where it becomes interesting. You have to have a basic knowledge, the understanding the common thread when it comes to different types of handguns. So let's say you're on the street in a live fire shoot, you lose your weapon, it gets damaged, and there's a battlefield pickup and you pick it up. Well, you better have a basic understanding of how it works. So what the round robin competition does, when the first shooter goes, the timer starts, they have to lock and load their weapon and shoot with accuracy at their designated target, and then race to the next gun, which is only 2 or 3 feet away, but there's all these little tricks you learn. You race to the next gun, lock and load it, engage the next target to the designated number, and do that again 5 times in a row within 50 seconds. And let me tell you something. I'll have some professional shooters come up and spit up all over themselves and screw this up because it's not the way they trained. That's the whole purpose of this competition. There is no way to train on the street other than the basics. When something happens on the street, you do not know what to expect. So you have to have a general concept idea, the common threads, and the basic knowledge and ability to apply your skill at arms to stop the threat if necessary. And what this competition does, it puts you under a time limit, it puts you under an accuracy limit, and it puts you under basic common knowledge of how to use different guns. So I get shooters who come here and start, and they may not be very good under the stress. After 4, 5, or 6 times, they're at that level where they could potentially win, because it just takes one person who knows what they're doing to screw up once, and one person who's getting better to do really good one day, and you can win. The individual who won yesterday is a perfect example of that. Started off, good shooter, a little rough, but has refined and refined and refined himself to the point where he outdid everybody else last night and won a Rock Island Armory Model 206 38 snub-nose revolver. Pretty nice. So come check it out. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the homepage, and up at the top there's a link. You can click on the link and it'll tell you about all the different rules of the competition. Or you can go to Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel. Check out the videos when it comes to the obstacle competition itself. It's a lot of fun. The next competition is going to be on June 9th. And we're going to have a telephone booth that has been converted into a safe. You can put your guns in there, mounted to the floor. It looks cool. It's a $500 item. And you know, with a $20 entry fee, you just might win it. So next month, we'll be giving information about that. Now, May 20th, it's coming up. That's next week, right, Trey? Next Saturday. We're going to be having a live remote at ANC Firearms. And we're going to have special guests there. We'll have Zoli and Zoli Volton and Mark Boer, our basic instructors at the gun seminars, are going to be there at ANC Firearms with me. Mark it down. Come on out. I'm going to be giving a free class on gun familiarization after the show. If you've got a gun and you're clueless on how to use it, or you don't have a gun and you're thinking about buying one and don't know what you're doing, you need to come to that class. It's free, okay? It's going to be about an hour long, hour and 15 minutes long. It's going to be the basic fundamentals of understanding of handguns and how they work and basic common threads and answering of your questions on that. It's for free. It's ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. You can give them a call at 254-983-4417, and they can, you know, tell you how to get there. Now, I have available parties at Aaron's. If you have a business party, a small corporate party, some special event for 18 or olders, you can utilize the gun range and the classroom. We've got the bar set up, the whole works. It's a private social gathering, a business meeting, or corporate event, whatever, for management or celebration of whatever type of ceremony you got going on. So give me a call on that. We can explain. seminars. People ask me, are you going to set up another seminar? I only set up a few seminars per year, and everything else is based on people calling me in groups of five or more for whether it's self-defense with a handgun and home invasion, if it's shotgun, if it's AR platforms only, or if it's semi-auto rifle platforms. If you've got a group of five or more and want to do some advanced training, you give me a call. We'll set it up, give you all the details. Otherwise, go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the High Cap Adventure page, and you'll see all the different types of seminars that we have available. They're great. We also have the one that's ladies only. Ladies love this. Ladies, get your girls together, and you'll have a blast at this seminar. Trust me, go on to the testimonial page of aaronsgunshop.com. You get to listen to all the people who have taken the classes. Now, we have spaces available for sponsors. If you have an interest in this program and like what's on this program and want to be a support to this program, it doesn't stay on by itself, everybody. If you like to hear this program, hopefully, please support it by either liking us on Facebook, making donations, becoming a sponsor, attending the functions, calling up the show like Mr. Johnson did. Thank you again, Mr. Johnson. Appreciate the call. It's always good to know people are listening and calling in. So you can support in many different ways. Please support the program if you like it, all right? So we've got a lot of things going on. If you have any questions, give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and go to the website aaronsgunshop.com or give us a call here at the studio at 254-697-6633. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, today is May 13th, 2017, the day before Mother's Day. Please, guys, don't forget your moms. I want to make a comment. I am, I'm not worthy. I'm totally not worthy, but I've been totally blessed by the people who are around me and how they support me. And they pick me up when I fall down. They put up with me, so on and so forth. I just want to let everybody know I'm totally blessed, totally undeserving so, but I am. And I just want to thank all those people who help, encourage, and all that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be doing our product spotlight. But I want, before I do that, I wanted to answer a question from a caller about why I don't talk about rifles as much as pistols. And there's a very simple reason. I'm not as an expert with the rifle as I am with a pistol. So I bring on guests who are. And for the person who called up about that, if you have specific questions, feel free to give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or whatever, because we have our lead instructors. We've got Mark Boyer. We've got Zoltan Varga. Mark is more rotational. What I mean by that is he's in and out of country all the time. So when he's here. But Zoli is here consistently and is very excited about what he does. And he's very good at what he does when it comes to rifles. And it doesn't matter if it's an AR, SKS, whatever. He just needs to know what it is. And he can pretty much talk about it and give you some ideas and guidance to any kind of question that you may have concerning rifles or optics, actually. He's very good at that kind of stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, the product spotlight is sponsored by ANC Firearms, and ANC Firearms is located in Heidenhammer. Arch Kuntz is the owner. He's a very good friend of mine, awesome guy. His crew, you've got Clint, Dennis, Mike, they're all great guys. What's neat about his location is they're in Heidenhammer, but it's the old bank in downtown Heidenhammer, and downtown is like about 100 feet long, but the old bank is on the corner. And Chief, I think you know Arch, don't you?
Oh yeah, I've known well. Only F I've ever received in my entire educational career from him. But it made me learn.
That's awesome. Anyway, they've got some great guns, great knives, accessories, holsters, gun bags, reloading equipment, so on and so forth. But today, what they have on their shelf is a Glock 41 Gen 4, and I'm going to be reading to you a review from Guns America, and I always do this because I want somebody else's perspective. I already know about the gun, but I want you to hear somebody else's perspective. And I'll read it. I'll make a few comments myself. But we're talking about the Glock 41, which is a 45 ACP, and the smaller brother to that one is the Glock 21, which I have, and it's an awesome pistol. But this one, honestly, for the extension on the barrel, which I'll explain in a second, oh my gosh, does it make a difference? You wouldn't think it makes a difference, but it does. So let me read this review, and we'll just get up to speed. And we'll talk about it briefly here. The Glock 41, well, first of all, give ANC Firearms a call, 254-983-4417. And ladies and gentlemen, Arch is a sponsor. And it's because he enjoys the show, he believes in what we're doing here. But ladies and gentlemen, I can't stay on the air without support. And he gives me support, and you need to support him. So when you hear about this gun or any gun and you like it, don't go shopping around. Go support ANC Firearms, because he supports the show. We need to support each other so that we can all do what we need to do. But anyway, here, the Glock 41 is a larger competition version of the G21, the 45 ACP Glock 21. Rather than rush to review this gun back in February, we decided to shoot it a lot, and it is very consistent. Gunslingers agree on very few things, but one of them is that bigger, longer guns are easier to shoot and shoot well. And this is doubly true when you have to do a lot of shooting. Glock owners are a fierce bunch of gunslinging devotees, and now they have a Gen 4 version of what is essentially a bigger, longer 45 ACP Glock 21. This is the last of the competition trio that joins the G34, a long slide 9mm Glock 17, and the G35, a long slide 40 caliber of the Glock 22. This new G41 has a barrel about 0.6 inches longer and has about a 3/4 inch more sight radius than the Glock 21, but it actually comes in a couple of ounces lighter. The Glock 41 holds the same 13+1 45 ACP rounds as the Glock 21. Now, our test gun was one of the first in the country back at SHOT Show in 2014, and after over 1,000 rounds in casual shooting from visitors to our shooting complex since that time, its performance has remained very good and consistent. The Glock 41 was built for competition, and that means it could be subjected to tens of thousands of rounds over the course of its lifetime. We found the Glock 41 to be as solid as a rock. We tested the gun a lot with federal ammo available at Walmart and Hornady, Steel Match, and another inexpensive ammo for competition. If you're asking yourself, why would anyone want such a behemoth? And he says, I think this is the biggest Glock made. The answer is physics and the way this affects ergonomics. I didn't have a Glock 21 side by side to compare this gun to, but against my other plastic 45s and 1911s, this gun has significantly less muzzle flip, which I can concur. It is fairly easy to muscle the gun to not flip hardly at all. Having a little more metal at the front definitely changes the feel of the Glock 41, but somehow they made the gun actually lighter, without a cutout like you see in many other competition pistols. The extra distance between the sights, which is 6.77 inches in the Glock 21 and 7.56 inches in the Glock 41, I'm sorry, 6.77 inches in the Glock 21 and 7.56 inches in the Glock 41 increases your ability to finely aim at distance. The further apart the sights, the more degrees there are between any point on the rear sight and the front sight. When you look at a slice of a circle called a radius, all other forces being equal, the average person should be able to shoot the G41 a little bit better than the G21. In competition, that little bit can mean winning and losing. No matter how you slice it, a double stack 45 ACP is a behemoth. This gun may not fit you, so stop by ANC Firearms and try one. The magazine of these guns hold 13 rounds. Got a call?
Yep.
Okay, give me a minute. I'll be done here in just a minute. There are advantages of the Glock 41 from a home defense standpoint, though. If you are keeping one handgun in the house for defense against a possible intruder, the G41 is going to have some advantages over its shorter brother. Besides the muzzle flip and sight radius, there will be slightly more power behind the 45 ACP bullet. A longer barrel means more powder burning before the bullet exits, which translates to slightly more velocity. Is this significant? Not really. But if you are buying one gun, you want to get really good with that gun, there's no reason not to buy a Glock 41 over the 21 if you're thinking about one for home defense. A lot of people want a Glock and only a Glock. Hang out at any gun counter for a day and you'll see this is probably the biggest, baddest Glock, and it shoots really well. Testing accuracy, I was able to put all 14 rounds into a couple inches at 25 yards, which in my estimation is the end of the driveway. In competition, that is generally going to be the longest handgun target distance, and it is easy to keep the gun right where you need it. Ultimately, nobody can tell you how accurate a handgun will be for you because your hands and your ergonomics are yours alone. This gun has the potential to be very accurate if it fits you. That would be true of all Glocks in my experience. This gun will not fit everyone, and I count myself among the group, though I was able to shoot it acceptably well. The Glock 41 has all the same features as the rest of the Glocks. It is the standard safe action single constant trigger pull. The trigger pull is in the normal range for Glocks, about 6 pounds, with a crisp break at the end. The nice thing about Glocks is that they are all the same, and they all work great. Doing one thing well is a lesson many companies could take from Glock. That is why they have an army of devotees who refuse to shoot anything but. There is no other gun like the Glock, and the G41 is a nice addition to the line for which many have been waiting. Stop into ANC Firearms and see if the gun fits you. If it does, this is a great choice for a lot of different applications, including the competition space for which it was created. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is me talking. That Glock 41, or any long slide Glock, is incredible. It really is. I'm totally impressed. I'm a 1911 guy, and the reason I pick Glocks is because it has the same basic angle of approach on the grip. So for my hand and the way it works, because I talked about ins and innie and outies when it comes to the palms, if you have like a recess in your palm, you kind of need like an arched mainspring housing to fit that hollow spot in your hand, otherwise the gun won't line up well. Well, for me, a 1911 with an arched mainspring housing is the same thing if you put it on top of a Glock pistol. It's got the same angle of approach for the grip. It's got the same little hump there at the bottom to fit the hole in my hand, and it's a natural point shooter, and the trigger, for being the type of trigger it is, breaks really nice. So if you're looking for a Glock, or if you already have a Glock, you need to check this one out. And they also make 30-round mags. I think it's 30-round mag. It might be a 26-round mag and a 45 ACP. But who the heck with a mag change? If you've got this thing at the nightstand by your bed, and you got a 25-round mag in there, a 45 ACP with a flashlight connected to it, you've got an incredible weapon to defend your home. The last thing you want to do in a gunfight has to worry about changing mags. So think about it. Call ANC Firearms at 254-983-4417. Check it out on the shelf there, and I think you will be totally impressed. Chief, you got a comment about that?
I do. For 19 years, I carried the Glock 21, one of the finest weapons I've ever carried in my life. The recoil on it was extremely small. It fit my hand perfectly, and you got to understand, I've got very large hands, size 16 ring finger, but even a smaller person can carry them. One of our local police departments, that's the issued firearm of the departments. And this new Glock, I've seen the new Glock, it fits almost the same exact frame size. Man, it is a gun that's unbelievable. I'd go, if you got the money and you got the chance, go buy one of those, because they are weapons that are unbelievable.
Well, let me follow up on what you just said. Now, I have not shot the Glock 41, but I have shot the, I forget the nomenclature of it, but the 9mm long slide version. 9mm's got higher velocity, okay? And with that extra long slide, it really tames it down. And so I can only imagine with a slower 45 AC bullet shooting that gun, because my Glock 21s don't pop at all. It's just so easy to shoot them. With that extra weight at the front end, the longer sight radius, and the slower, heavier bullet of a 45 ACP, I can only imagine.
Oh, it is. And I mean, a small person to a large person can shoot that gun efficiently. Your hands almost mold around the grips, and it is just a, talking about control, you have a control. You can group easy, and it's a weapon that is just one that's a great self-defense weapon or a police carry weapon.
And the thing I forgot to mention, it's a Gen 4. So even if you don't have that hollow in your palm, and you've got more of a flat palm, the Gen 4 has adjustable back strap, right, so you can change it to whatever works for you. So go call ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, don't look at it and say, that's cool, but I can get it $10 cheaper here. That doesn't work. You need to support our local people who support this radio show. Give ANC Firearms a call, 254-983-4417. Tell them I sent you, and they will treat you like royalty, okay? All right. Caller's gone. Okay, we had a caller. Caller, if you want to call back, I'm done. We can talk. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Trey Wallace will be doing a special interview, and I'll explain it on the other side. Saturday, May 13th, we've got about 23 minutes left in the show. We had a phone call come in. And Trey, what was the question asked?
He asked about, can you carry a rifle with your license to carry?
Okay, I can understand why that may be a question, but let's be clear. Carrying a rifle in no way, shape, or form has anything to do with license to carry. License to carry is its own little sphere of rules and regulation. It has to do with only handguns, revolvers, pistols. Revolver is a revolver, a pistol is an automatic pistol, and license to carry has only to do with that. You have the right to walk down the street if you want in a non-threatening manner with your rifle strapped to your shoulder. You can carry it. If that's what you choose to do, you're more than welcome to do so. But please do it in a very respectful, courteous, appropriate manner, not to cause alarm, to avoid questioning yourself and to just scaring people for no unnecessary reason. But you definitely do have the right to do that, and it does not have anything to do with license to carry. So I hope I answered the question to the caller. If you have any other questions, anybody, give us a call, 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or just go directly to the website, aaronsgunshop.com, and give us some support. Like us on Facebook. Let's get those numbers up, please, and we'll take it from there. Now, Trey, I'm going to hand over the microphone to you, and you are going to do the next segment for probably about the next 20 minutes. So why don't you go ahead and take the show?
All righty. You know, during the course of this show, on Aaron's High Cap Adventures has had many different guests, and we've covered a staggeringly wide array of skills, from, you know, portrait painting to custom weapon making to legislating. We even have lawyers. Today, though, we have our strangest guest yet. That would be our host, Matt Beatros.
Woohoo!
All right, Matt. So we want to talk a little bit so that the audience can get to know you a little better, because you're talking to them every Saturday morning, and well, they need to know who they're listening to.
They may get scared.
We're going to start with just the basics. I mean, you're real big into shooting, so what got you into it?
Well, I'll tell you, Trey, a lot of people ask me that question. It's like, what got me into what I do? Well, I'll tell you. My dad, World War II vet, okay? My whole family is military-oriented. It goes all the way back to my grandfather's. My grandfather on my dad's side was in the National Guard up in New York. My grandfather on my mother's side was a special aid intelligence officer to Lawrence of Arabia, and I've got all the documentation on that too, so it's a pretty wild history. So my dad was a World War II vet, into guns, the whole works, and I remember growing up, I remember, you know, was, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years old playing in the front living room, and there's my dad was an artist as well, so he would display all his antiques and types of guns and display cabinets. So there I am in the midst of all these guns looking at them like it's no big deal. And then I started looking at them and say, hey, that's pretty cool. What is it? My dad would show it to me in the proper manner. And so I got hooked. And I've been shooting since I was 4 years old. So when you start shooting that young and it becomes part of you, it's just like a whole bunch of people down here, man. When they start shooting when they're a little kid, it's just nothing. It's ingrained into you to shoot. So that's how I got my start, was through my dad because of his interest in guns.
So what did you start on it for?
I still have it to this day. It was a Colt single-shot bolt-action rifle. I think it was called a Coltier, I think it was. I still got it. Man, I could at 100 yards, I could shoot. I would hang cans off these little leather strips, like shoelace strips. I wouldn't shoot the can. I would shoot the leather strips, okay? My eyes were great, and I was shooting with that, and my dad would give me a box of 100 rounds, Remington 22s in those plastic honeycomb boxes. He said, that's what you got. And I had one shot at a time, and I got very proficient. Back in the day, I was very good with rifles, but then something happened where I got into pistols, and I stopped playing with rifles except for my ARs and all that kind of stuff and tactical type of shooting. But when it comes to bullseye accuracy, I started with a 22 Colt. Tier, I believe it's called, but I've still got it to this day. Love it. Won't get rid of it.
So what led you into handguns?
That's a good question. I think it has to do with the 1911.
Well, I can see that.
World War II, 1911. I'm an artist myself. I used to draw pictures of G.I. Joes with the pistol. Back in the day, they still have it now. They've got collector's armory, and they sell these fake guns that are one-to-one scale. And back when I was a kid, I don't think 10 years old, a long time ago, 40-something years ago, I ordered one. I had to save up some money. Back then, it was no big deal. You just get this gun. I'm playing with it, taking it apart, learning it. And that got me into the handgun aspect of it. Was more the World War II. If you ever go to my shop, Trey, which you have, you'll see all the action figures. I got the Germans on one side and the Americans on the other side because my dad was in the war. So that has a lot of interest to me. And the 45, 1911 was a major part of that. So I got hooked on the pistol. But I have to think later on, I really can't answer that question. It was a sudden happening, but I don't remember exactly what it was where I just started getting into it. But it definitely got enhanced back in 2000, or actually 96, when Bush signed the law to carry concealed. I was licensed up in New York as of age 21 to carry concealed. And it's very hard to get up there, by the way. And so I've been carrying a pistol there for self-defense. But I didn't really master my skill with a handgun until later down here.
Have you ever shot competitively?
I haven't shot competitively what people think is competitive. I shoot competitive more streetwise competitive. I do not like regimented type of competitions. I think it's a false reality. Now, if you like it just because it's something to do, it definitely does enhance your skills. Don't get me wrong. But I think it loses the factor of realism when it comes to defending yourself on the street. I'm not a marksmanship shooter. I am a self-defense shooter. Big difference. And I tell people that in my class, I say, if you're here for me to teach you how to shoot a bullseye at 15 yards and put it in the same hole, you're in the wrong class. I'm here to teach you how to shoot a 6-inch circle under stress in a matter of a second without aiming your pistol. So there's a big difference when it comes to that. But I have done competitions. I love competitions. It puts you under the test, but I like them under certain conditions. And that's why, once again, I've come up with the round robin competition, which I think is awesome.
So it's more shooting with sort of a preparedness flavor to it.
That's right.
Which is kind of cool, because it'll bring us into our next question.
Ooh,
here.
Okay, what do you got?
So what got you into prepping?
Heck, that's a question that can come up with a long answer. Oh. A lot of things have got me into prepper. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, I briefly went into the Boy Scouts. My other brothers, I'm 5 years from my next oldest brother. I have three other brothers. The next oldest one is 5 years from me, and then it's a 2-year separation between them both. Well, those three guys all went to the Boy Scouts, did great, Life Star, Eagle Scout, the whole works. When I went in, where I was living in the time frame I was, it was under poor management, the Boy Scouts, in that particular troop. And I went in for a little bit, got a few merit badges, but I just never did it. But that fueled my interest of being prepared, always having the special tool for that special situation in case it ever arose. I'm a gadget guy, okay? And so that got me. And then as time went on, I would always be prepared. You know, you always have, you make sure the spare tire is filled with air, you got your jumper cables. It's just basic standard operating procedure for a person so you can become independent upon everybody, not have to be dependent on waiting for somebody to come and help you. I hate that. I am that way in a lot of aspects because I'm not as skilled as so many other people when it comes to mechanics and all that kind of stuff. But I try to do the best I can to be non-reliant on other people. But the biggest thing came in 2006. Back in that time, we're in the wars, Afghanistan, Iraq, all that kind of stuff. And it's going to take a while for me to explain this, but I was news fanatical because I want to know what's going on with our guys over there, our guys and gals protecting us and doing their stuff, and I every second. And something was said over the radio, and I forget what it was, but it made me want to research the Kennedy assassination. And so once I got the bug, I'm starting to look up all this stuff, and you would see the standard things on the internet. But then if you dug deeper and looked at different types of documentation as to what happened and what is not really promoted and what a lot of people don't know, I saw this information concerning the Kennedy assassination. I'm saying, hey, wait a minute here. I'm not stupid. I can see what's going on. I know what bullet impact does to an individual. I know which direction a bullet comes from. And you're trying to tell me it's a lone shooter? I don't buy it. That opened the gateway to me to question news. I think I never said it, but I was checking out fake news all the time back then. I'm saying, this is ridiculous. And I started losing my trust in what the media would tell me and what politicians would tell me. I'm thinking it's all screwed up because I would hear politicians say it. I would see them say it. And then the news would report it differently. I go, wait a minute, I was there when it happened. So it caused me to start doubting. And because of that doubt and then learning more and studying more about economics and potential natural disasters or anything that could potentially happen, I'm saying to myself, you know, I'm vulnerable. I'm vulnerable because I counted on, I had the faith of my politicians and the faith of government and all this kind of stuff. But I'm telling you, I've seen too many things happen where politicians and government have failed to take care of the populace. You've got to do it on your own. And because of that, I went prepper fanatical. Prepper fanatical goes through phases. There's ignorance. And then all of a sudden somebody shows you and you start freaking out and you hyperdrive on preparedness until you get to a burnout point. Then you burn out, you recover, and then you come back and say, okay, I'm up to speed now. I know what's going on. Not a problem. I understand how it works. I know what's going on. I'm good to go. You just take it and say, hey, I'm prepared basically for mostly what happens. But that's the phases it goes through, and that's what I think got me started on being a prepper. And because I'm the type of person who likes to be on the radio and share my knowledge and my experiences, I use this radio show as a platform to help and tell people, hey, you know, I've been here, done this. I've talked to people who know and been here and done this, who I trust and I've seen and that have history with me, and I want to share it with others.
So if you could sum up your philosophy on prepping, how would you do that?
Expect the unexpected. Don't be sitting or standing with your head in the sand. Don't be oblivious to the reality of life. Don't think. You've got to be accountable for yourself. If you have a family, children, I'm talking to guys specifically here. Guys, get off your butts. Take care of your family. But I am going to teach you this. Don't get paranoid. Paranoid is lack of knowledge. I'm not paranoid. I'm very knowledgeable. And when you have this knowledge and you understand and you know and you see and you study and evaluate and confirm, you go, okay, I know what needs to be done. There's no need to panic. Just know what you need to do and get it done.
We got a little bit of about 10 minutes here left in the show. So you got any stories, any real life stories you want to share with us? I know you're always asking callers for theirs and your guests. You got any you want to share with us?
Yeah, I've got a few stories. There's, I always, in my class, I talk about this. I don't think I've ever talked about this on the air. If I have, I'll just repeat it. But I'm always talking about being aware of your surroundings. And I read these stories from the NRA and Concealed Carry magazine about how hey, you know, you should have been prepared, or you should have trained, or you should have been aware of your surroundings. Well, I'll give you a story, a true story. Up in New York, I'm licensed to carry, and I would carry, up in New York, the weather's a little different down here. I used to carry shoulder rigs all the time up in New York because the weather would permit it, unless it was the super hot summer and humidity, and then you'd alternate to a different platform and carrying a gun. But most of the time, I'm wearing a long leather trench coat, and I got my 1911 strapped to my shoulder. And I'm going down the street to my work, which happened to be one block down, to the right one block, and there I am at work. I was very fortunate that time just to have a quick walk. But as I'm going down the street up to the intersection, on the opposite corner, there's an apartment building of about probably 10 stories, and there's six people on the stoop, the steps to the apartment building. And as I'm walking down, being aware of my surroundings, I'm always listening for noises, looking for shadows behind bushes. And it's not paranoia. It is because I know. I know what can happen. Trey, I had machine gun fire happening two buildings down from me in the alleyway. I wake up the next morning. I didn't wake up. I heard it. Then I went to bed and I woke up the next morning to go down the street. And there's bullet holes in this BMW. Stuff happened on my street. Crack houses, prostitution, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I'm walking down the street. And being aware of my surroundings, I see the six guys. They see me. I'm approaching the corner, but they split off into three groups. Two stay on the stoop. Two go across the street. Two go across the other side of the street, and they're converging on me. And there's nobody else around, and I know what's going on. And as they approach, I opened up the right side of my leather trench coat to show them a very nice, pretty Colt Series 70 1911. And I go, "Not today, guys." And they look at me, and they go, "That's cool, man." I go, "That's right." And they backed off. So the scenario, the experience that you get from that is you always be aware of your surroundings. Understand there's always a threat. Avoid it if at all possible. And what I did there was Penal Code 904. That's threat is justifiable force. I showed them, hey, you're going to mess with me. I have a way to combat it. And so they walked off. But a lot of people may not know that, may not have that confidence, may not know what to do, and could become a victim of people like that. So that was one story. I had another story, which is pretty cool. I was in a group of four. I was the fourth person, very close friends back in New York. And I was Army, one was Navy, one was Marines, another was law enforcement. Well, I'm walking up the street, the opposite direction on my street, with this guy, and he's in a naval uniform. He's wearing his blues, I guess, with the bell bottoms. And we're walking up the street, and as we're walking up the street, I noticed there's a vehicle tracking us. It's creeping along, and I go, this isn't right. Something's not right, man. I can tell. It's just not the way things happen on this street. So as we're walking up the street, all of a sudden, you know how when you slap your foot on the accelerator, you hear that engine, vroom, right? As soon as I heard that, I knew it was happening. This vehicle races up to parallel us. The driver whips out this chrome stainless steel or something shiny 38 revolver, leans it on the side of the driver door. I see it. I grab this guy and body slam him on the other side of the bushes just so we can get down low. The thing was, the individual driving knew the sailor, and he was messing around. He was just kidding around. And I wanted to go punch this guy in the face. But I bring that up because it didn't matter. Even though it was a friendly, I registered it as a threat. And I was aware of my surroundings. I acknowledged it was a threat. I was aware of my surroundings. And I did what I had to do at that particular moment to avoid the situation. So that's another scenario. So real things happen. Even if it's not real, if you perceive it to be real, it is real. So you have to know and how to respond to it.
So it's kind of better to err on the side of caution.
Yes, I would think so.
So if you could give the listeners one piece of what you consider the most vital piece of advice that you can give, what would that be?
Don't be ignorant. Don't be ignorant to life and the situation and the reality of there is a threat out there. Am I paranoid? No. I am aware. I acknowledge there's a threat. I'm aware of my surroundings, and I avoid it if at all possible. And if not, I'm trained to deal with it. And I will deal with it very thoroughly.
Well, Chief, you got anything you want to chime in?
Oh, no. I've known Matt now for a number of years. And, you know, the one thing I can say, he's got a passion that is truly a passion. And that is something that you don't see in a lot of people. You know, because of him, I've changed a lot of things that I've even done and a lot of the ways that I think about things. And I have to compliment him on that. There's, of course, nobody agrees on everything all the time. But one of the things I can say is Matt has not said a whole lot of things that I don't agree with. And I'm not saying that to blow smoke in the nose of you or anything. But, you know, being in the business I've been in for 43 years, I've seen a lot of people hurt. I've seen a lot of people that have been victims because they didn't prepare. And because they didn't look into what was around them. They didn't know their surroundings.
That's right.
And that's something I've passed on to my kids. I've passed on to, my friends. And I think that Matt is doing a service that, you know, more people ought to take avail of.
You know, you said something, Chief, about facts. I study what I talk about, and I pick the facts that are not any way, shape, or form can be argued.
And that's the only way to do it.
And one of the facts is some things are opinionated. law depends on who you got that day and who's the jury. The fact is, there is no fact when it comes to that. So you must be aware of that and understand that your line in the sand that gets crossed, the more you know, the more experienced you are, the further away that line in the sand gets. And it gives you more time, gives you more options. The more ignorant you are, and ignorance is not a bad word, that's just meaning you just don't know. Okay? The more ignorant you are on a particular situation, the more mistakes you can make, the less options you have, the more trouble you can get into. So I highly recommend people, if you're going to carry a gun, make sure you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I concur with that 100%. You know, I think a lot about our communities here in the Central Texas area. And, you know, one of the things that I am very proud of is law enforcement around here. But I also know law enforcement's only a human being, like Mr. Dodds eloquently said earlier today. Police officers aren't perfect. People aren't perfect. People are going to make mistakes. Police officers are going to make mistakes. And I really appreciate the fact that you don't shy away from saying that. So many times people are scared to say truly what they feel about law enforcement. And I'll be the first to tell you, there is no perfect law enforcement officer. And there is no perfect scenario.
But let me say this. When we talk about these officers who make mistakes, we don't talk about they go, oh, look, that officer made a mistake.
Oh, no,
we don't do that. We say, you see, he's an officer.
He's human.
He's human. He's supposed to be knowledge, but he's human.
Exactly.
He's going to make mistakes. And because those mistakes are very possible, you must take that into consideration in the mix.
And you know what some of those mistakes are caused by? Ignorance. And I'll be first to admit it. There are so many police officers, me included, with 43 years, that aren't where they need to be up to speed on the laws and up to speed on what's happening currently. You know, just because we were taught something in the police academy, I went to the police academy 44 years ago, and I'm telling you, if you don't keep up with what happens in 44 years, if you don't keep up with something that happens in 6 years, 6 months as far as the law is concerned, the changes in the law, you're going to get behind the eight ball.
I'm pro-law all the way, yep. Okay? But here's the deal. Law enforcement, when you look at this video, ladies and gentlemen, probably on Tuesday, you're going to see me showing the penal code that these guys got to learn. It's about this big. License to carry people got about this much, which I'm doing about an inch as compared to like 3 feet. Master it. It's only an inch thick. If you're going to carry, license to carry, master it. Law enforcement officer, he's human. She's human. There's no way you can remember. That's why they sit in the police car for 30 minutes because they're referencing a penal code to make sure they know what they're talking about. Okay? It's no hidden secret. Trey's giving me the high sign that we've got about less than a minute to go here. But ladies and gentlemen, look, I love doing what I do. If you love hearing what you hear, I need your support. Can't do it by myself. Can't do it with just a certain amount of sponsors. We need your support. Support the sponsors. Become a sponsor. Give me a call. We'll talk about it. We'll see what we can do. And I'll get you part of the program and keep this thing going. But I'll tell you what, Trey, what I got? 30 seconds?
That's about right.
All right.
20 seconds.
Well, for 20 seconds, here's what I'm going to say. Love what I do. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm blessed to be around the people I am. And until next week, keep your powder dry. And God bless and happy Mother's Day.